the Gemara identifies, and we're all aware of this, that women are blessed with Bina Yaseira, with an extra level of understanding, what we call intuition. That women's intuition is very, very real. Kol Asher Tomar, whatever your wife, Sarah, says, Shema B'kol, listen to her. There's a level of intuition that what we mentioned before, men insist on analyzing things, and very often a woman will intuit what has to be done, and it comes naturally. It comes from an inner sense. It comes from experience, whatever it is. This is one of the great blessings. When a child, when one has a busy house and things have to get taken care of, intuition is far more important. Intuition happens right away. It happens, it hits the spot. It's usually on target. That's a much more important value than being able to sit back in a detached way and figure out what's the problem, how are we going to get out of the problem. Intuition does not carry so much value in Western thought. In a society which is driven by science, where everything has to be, where value means it's been analyzed, it's been proven at once, has to be provable by several experiments. Intuitions don't get published, right? So intuition does not carry the weight, the value that we place in this. So again, we're living in two worlds. We're living in a world that doesn't have great value in intuition. And yet, in our world, it's important for us, that's Bina Yaseira, it's one of the great, great gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has blessed women with. The life that we live, the pace that it maintains, and we all buy into this, requires a tremendous amount of planning, tremendous amount of organization. It requires, again, we buy into this, that part of the pace of being in the metropolitan area and part of the pace of living in these times is that things have to, we schedule ourselves. We schedule ourselves sometimes with great, in very, very tight ways. We have pictures of what has to happen on a given day. We have in our minds how long each thing is supposed to take. We often, you all often schedule things so that you can do important things on the way to do other important things. Kadosh Baruch Hu's plan, his program was that the person who's chiefly in charge of the home would be free from seishas man grama, be free from time-bounded mitzvahs. That's a different world. Kadosh Baruch Hu understood that a child doesn't, his thinking and his needs or her needs are not scheduled. A child reacts to something, we'll never know exactly what the child's going to react to, when the child's going to react to something. So if we over-schedule ourselves, we often don't give children the room to breathe, to be able to, and then, this is a problem that we have, that I've been unfairly imposed upon us. These are such strong cultural influences that it's very, very hard, if at all possible, to try to fight these. But you have to appreciate that this is a tremendous tension that we don't speak about. But it's there. Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted that there should be one person in charge of a home who's not bounded by his mitzvahs. Right? Kadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvahs. He's willing to free. He understands the importance of every single mitzvah. Time boundedness was not a healthy thing for the way a family, a home, is supposed to function. A child should be given the opportunity to be able to move along with the child, let the child react in a certain way, and then deal with it, and then talk about it. And then, I think the fourth issue, even with all of the talk that we find in America in the last decade or so about the importance of the home, I still don't think that it comes anywhere near our understanding of the importance of a home. I don't think so. I think that Rav Cook, years and years and years ago, when the issue of women voting came up, this goes back in Eretz Yisrael, I think, to the 30s, maybe even earlier. And then, again, it's a different world. It was one vote per family. It was one vote for the men. This was in the Mizrahi, in the Aguda, what we would call primaries. And the issue came up that now we have to have two votes per family, husband's vote and a woman's vote, and a wife's vote. Rav Cook was terribly distressed by this. He was distressed by Rav Cook's approach always to try to look at some of the underlying issues. So Rav Cook said that if that what we're heading into is the lack of appreciation of the importance of family. That if a person would appreciate that what it means to be responsible, to be invested in the family, to bring a family into being, then a person would not need any of the public approvals that have became so much part of Western thought. And again, that was his way of looking at it. He said, "This is if we would appreciate what it means to run a home, to run a house, to be responsible for a house, then one wouldn't. Then these things would be klanikite. To vote, you can't vote. You can vote for the leader of the state of Israel. That's klanikite. If you realize that your home is your responsibility. That's how we saw these things. And so again, these are four areas that just come to mind. This is the unfairness that that women have, I think. And the pressures that we expect of ourselves, that we will function in a way that Western thought will think us to be successful and productive, and we will function in a way that Torah thinks that's not two full-time jobs, that's two full-time identities, that's two full-time sets of ambitions, and that's a terribly unfair situation for women to be in. And again, one which we're not in the position to resolve. I think we are in the position to recognize it and to maybe carve out different expectations for ourselves. We are in the position to at least bring to the fore the values that sometimes get hidden and sit under the carpet. We know they're all there. We know the value of modesty, of being understated is there. The value of intuition is there. The value of home, the value of having a relaxed atmosphere at home is there. So if we can't achieve those because society won't let us, but at least let's speak of those values, connect with those values, and give them a higher profile in their own minds and their own homes so that they will be a source of appreciation and a source of self-esteem and self-approval. And these things, again, boil down to the importance that the home and that being in charge of the home and the setting of the home, the climate of the home, the importance of all of that, that's what all of these things are. Intuition and modesty and a relaxed atmosphere and the importance of home, that's what it all, they all come from the same principle. And if we speak about these things, so then I think that it will be a source of greater achievement. And I'm hoping that if we, in our own minds, highlight them, so then that will relieve a lot of the pressures that that come about. Because if we can highlight and have our values, Torah values, be the source of our self-esteem and self-appreciation, and the source of appreciation in our homes, so then I think that maybe we could make a mark in some of the pressures that come about by having two such distinct identities. This idea of Matisyo Solomon, the Mashgiach of Lakewood, discusses in an essay that he wrote, is published in the English text With Hearts of Full of Faith, and he makes the following few very, very, again, as almost anything he writes, is very, very insightful. He writes that the beginning of Sefer Shmos, so there, Yocheved and Miriam are the heroes. They're the heroines. Yocheved and Miriam are the ones who move redemption. Nothing happens until Yocheved and Miriam get on the scene. Right? They are the ones who are saving Jewish babies. They are the ones who are standing up to the empire of the times, to Paro. And they're ones who are called in the rug by Paro. And with the tremendous strength and the dedication, they stand their ground. They're the ones who bring together the families that Moshe and Aaron will come to be born. And what he points out is that Chazal lists Yocheved and Miriam as Nevi'ot, as prophetesses, I guess, right? Two prophetesses. Right? So he says the following. He says, look, when we think of Yocheved and Miriam, who do we think of? We think that Shifra and Pua, taking care of babies. One was one would sit with the baby and coo the baby and warm the baby, and the other would actually deliver the baby. So when the Rambam discusses what it means to be a prophet or a prophetess, he writes that prophecy comes upon a person of great wisdom, of unusually strong character, whose impulses do not control him in any way whatsoever. He's a person of extremely wide knowledge, able to understand and absorb new concepts, consistently grow in holiness, condition himself not to have thoughts about anything insignificant. His mind is always attuned to God and always contemplating the wisdom of God, and then the divine inspiration immediately descends upon this person. So he says, if we think of Yocheved and Miriam, that's what we think of. Yocheved and Miriam were two women of an unusually strong character, of wisdom which is hard to grasp, of a knowledge of God so far beyond anything that that we can fathom. People who have achieved the highest level of spirituality. And what does the Torah say? When you don't know who Yocheved and Miriam were, it's all true, but we're not even going to record that. We're going to record that they were the ones who brought children into this world and were in charge of families. So if Solomon points out, he quotes from Shmuel Rozovsky, the Rashi Lepanovich, that's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to appreciate the roles and the importance of setting up a home, the role of taking care of a home. We should understand that if we have to choose between describing somebody as being one of the most person of great wisdom, it is of great character, of great spirituality, there's something which tops all of it. And what tops all of that is sitting with the baby and cooing the baby and making sure the baby is comfortable, and then building with that baby another generation and another person who will be of great service to Rabbon Shalom. The Gemara describes that the Gemara has, I think it's the Rabbeinu Yonah which describes that when he describes the role that women have, the Rabbeinu Yonah describes why is it that when Moshe Rabbeinu gave Torah to Klal Yisrael, he's told first speak to the women and then speak to the men. Right? Kosomar lebeis Yaakov, Yisagid livnei Yisrael. This is what you shall tell the women and the men after. The women come first. Why do the women come first? Rabbeinu Yonah says, because they are the ones that send off their children to school and see to it that they study Torah, and they are merciful when their children come home from school. Strange friends. They are merciful when their children come home from school. So then I read the following paragraph, and I brought this book in to be able to read this paragraph to you. It's amazing. He writes the following. This is Rav Solomon writing. He says, there isn't a single child that doesn't feel a bit abused by the end of the day. Even if a child enjoys learning, there's a limit. He can sit for 1 hour, for 2 hours, for three, but a whole school day is exhausting and grueling. If he comes home from school to a merciful and understanding mother, it's all bearable. But if he doesn't, then the school years are just a sentence to hard labor. By the time he gets up, until the time he goes to sleep, day after day, sentence of hard labor, who could possibly stand it? That's when I read this. I read this over again. This is not a criticism. I'm a machanech. I'm at fault of this. But this is not the critique of a school or a critique of a system. But if a child has test after test, a child has homework after homework, deadline after deadline, that happens. Our children have deadlines every single day, if not every day, every second day. They have many deadlines every day. So again, I'm not criticizing the system. The people who worked at the system know much more than I do about chinuch. They've been very successful. And these things are probably important in organizing and raising children. But when the boat capsizes, you have to understand what's going on with the child. And it's a grueling. It could be that children handle it better. They handle deadlines better. They handle it better because there's so many of them. But it's an amazing description that a child has to feel exhausted. So that's what Rabbeinu Yonah says, but then when the child comes home, that's why it's so more important. He says, if he comes home to a father will want to know what happened that day. Where's the homework? Did you behave yourself? Didn't you behave yourself? Right? But a merciful mother comes home and says, let's sit down, relax a little bit. And that's what can make this situation, again, one which we accept. Right? Children have done very, very well. They're doing very well with it. But to have that, I couldn't write this paragraph. If Solomon writes this paragraph, then it gives us a pause to think about. So Solomon in this article is writes, but not every family can live on one income. Not every family can have that the mother or one's wife is home on an ongoing basis. He says that's part of things and not the way they used to be, that we have mortgages and we have car payments and we have insurance payments and there are things and there's clothing and there's sometimes tuitions, right? Things where we have to pay hard for this grueling schedule. So he says, it can't be done. It's an upsetting thing. We have bought into many, many things that are not so good for the entire community, and it's not at a point where we don't have the wisdom to unravel these things. And there's a certain degree of comfort which is necessary. It may not be necessary in other contexts, but it's necessary in our context. As the Gemara writes, I always remind the Chassanim that the Gemara writes that a husband is responsible to support his wife in a fashion that she has grown used to growing up, or a fashion that she has become used to. Right? That's old imo ve'ena yeredes imo. It's right, and it's coming to a woman to say, this is, you married me from this kind of a context, and you can't expect me to. A woman can accept a different level of living, but it can't be imposed upon a woman. And a woman can say, you brought me to this neighborhood, and I have to be able to live normally in this neighborhood. These are all things that are coming there, the right thing to do. Again, it's all within a certain meter, with a certain measure. Doesn't mean that the husband should be forced to take on 3, 4, 5 jobs, but to work a solid day. Right? So these are things that we have come to accept and are appropriate and are coming to us. And for the most part, or for a large part, they often cannot be made on one salary. So Solomon writes, so those are the facts, right? And it's not an ideal situation, but it's one that we have accepted because there are values that we are going for. We want to live in a certain kind of neighborhood, have a certain kind of chinuch, have a certain degree of comfort, have a certain degree of satisfaction. So for whatever reason it is, that's what it is. So now he says, but then we have to figure out what are the elements that are required in a home which would be provided if it would be a one-income home, and then focus on these, define them, and try to the best of our ability to put them in place. If they can't be there naturally, then we have to artificially make sure that, and that's what we were discussing before, that these elements of trying to find some measure of relaxation, some the focus in the home, some measure of a quietness and tzinius at home, and the comfort at home. So all of these things are things that if they don't come to us naturally, so we have to make sure that we impose it. And he says, another very interesting comment, when we speak to men, so I often quote the Rambam, that the Rambam says, v'lo yeh otze v'lo yeh ragzon, that the husband should not be quick to get angry and shouldn't be a sad person. So the Mefarshim say, I once heard this from Rabbi Weinreb many years ago, and I found it in this kuntris of Rav Chaim Friedlander. He writes, it doesn't say that he should not get angry with his wife. It says he should not be angry. He shouldn't be an angry person. He shouldn't be a ragzon. He shouldn't be sad. So Rav Chaim Friedlander writes, a person, that a husband, when he comes home, he's not supposed to bring the aggravation of his work, of what goes on outside, inside the house. He's responsible to make sure the house functions with the level of the simcha and level of peace. He has to leave his aggravation, the issues he wants to discuss with his wife, the right time, in the right mood, the right climate. But he can't come, and that's an important part of being a husband, to make sure that when he comes home and has some time to relax and comes into the house, having left this behind. So Solomon writes that the same thing is true for one's wife if she when she comes back home. If a woman spends many many hours at work, and so then there's going to be a certain amount of aggravation that accrues in the course of a work day. So then a woman has to be careful also not to bring this into the house, to leave this outside of the house, and that it doesn't impact upon the functioning. So these kinds of things, these etzos that we have for how to keep the home in a climate that is comfortable and productive, so these have to be articulated and focused on. We'll close with a Gemara. Gemara says, Noshim b'may zochim. The Gemara says, what is the great merit of women? So the Gemara says that the women's great merit is that they take care of the children before they go on to learn, and they wait for the husbands to come back from the Beis HaMedrash. So the Gemara here is pointing out, again, a very important world that the Gemara is introducing to us. The idea of waiting for the husband to come home from the Beis HaMedrash, so that means that one of the great roles of women is to assure, is to work hard to see that their husbands are focused on learning. And I would put it in the following context. I would put it in the context that, first of all, again, Noshim Maizochin means that is a tremendous zechus. That means that the zechus of a husband like Rabbi Kiva, when Rabbi Kiva learned and he came back after 24 years of learning, Rabbi Kiva said that his wife has greater zechus in his learning than he has. That whatever I've accomplished is his wife's. That means, Achim Eves from Shana, a woman is able to claim all of the hours, not only the zechuyas, if she was busy taking care of the children and taking care of the house while her husband was learning, she has all the zechuyas of taking care of the house and all the zechuyas of her husband's learning at the same time. This, but again, it's a world of thinking over here. It's an important one to think about and to incorporate. That Gemara says, the Torah says, the Navi says, David HaMelech, Pekudei Hashem Yisharim Esam Chelev, that Kadosh Baruch Hu's Torah is a source of great happiness. This is an insight that Rabbi Friedler, Yisrael Rosh Hashiva of Breuers, many years ago, it was once in a neighborhood and he spoke, and he gave this this idea, which made a very strong impact on me. He said that there's importance to learning. We our community has a tremendous priority on learning. That, again, is axiomatic, need not be said. But what has to be said is that one of the great values of learning is that learning is a source of happiness. It's a source of being upbeat. And if a husband takes pleasure in learning, then the time that he learns and the simcha he gets from learning comes back into the house and gets fed into the house and becomes a source of a great source of peace and a source of simcha in the house. And so that's why I put it in the following context. Not everybody is cut out to learn many, many hours. Everybody is to learn to be kibbutzim, to set time aside. But everybody is cut out to be part of the simcha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. Some people are cut out to have that simcha, that happiness, by learning. Some by learning in specific ways. Some by accruing a lot of information. Some by going to shiurim. Some by having chavrusas. Some people will get their simcha by taking mitzvahs very seriously. Some people will get their simcha by being tremendous, tremendous bali chesed, people who extend themselves. Pekudei Hashem Yisar Mesam Chelev, because Baruch Hu's Torah is a Mesameach. It's full of being able to provide life and energy and simcha. Koyvei Hashem Yachlifu Koyach, a person who has a moon in their Ribbono Shel Olam continuously finds great energies. And if a woman can encourage her husband, again, in the right way, in a soft way, in a way that explains her own self-interest, she has vested interest in her husband's accomplishments in the Kadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. So that will feed itself back into the family and provide a source of simcha. It's not easy. We said before that there are our homes are under significant pressure, and And just the other day somebody said, you know, there's so many things going on in the house, so many things to juggle, so the my husband's learning is falling through the cracks. So I thought that it's worth experimenting. It's worth experimenting. That to see, sometimes, when we'll see, I'm not saying that if a person is, obviously if a person under tremendous pressure, so learning has to be one of the things that goes. I forget exactly where I read this, but there's a story of a young man who missed davening time and time and time again. And he was young, he was a man in the kolo. And so the mashgiach came over to him after a week or two and said, what's going on over here? The person in our kolo should miss davening every single day. So he said, I'll be honest with you, Rebbe. The last 2 weeks, I have been up in time for davening. I had my talisman still in my hand. I was ready to roll. And on the way to shul, on the way to the Beis HaMedrash, I passed by this woman. She's taking care of three kids. They're all crying at the same time. They're all, and she was exhausted. She hadn't slept for the entire night. And I couldn't take it. So I put down my talisman and I helped her out. So he said, if that's the case, let's find out who is this woman. We've got to help her out. He said, the woman is my wife. So of course, there's no question. That being said, when things are not so hairy, when things are not so stressful, there's a little bit of stress. So it's worth experimenting to see that if my husband will go to the Beis HaMedrash, and if he'll learn, or he'll learn over here, or provide him a place of learning, or he'll go learn with the Chavrusa, it's worth experimenting. Let's see. It's worth making a deal with the Ribbono Shel Olam. There are some Sfarim that say that you'll see things will settle down. So again, I would suggest that as something to think about, that even though piderach hateva, even though naturally it looks like this, again, not talking about unusual stress, not talking about having stuff for the night, talking about that regular everyday stress, maybe it's worthwhile experimenting. Same thing in business. A person's very, very stressed in business. Maybe it's worthwhile thinking, what Chazal say, do a little bit less business and see if one... if one's learning will create a chus that the Kadosh Baruch Hu will have a siyata d'shmaya, that the Kadosh Baruch Hu will provide that while